On this episode of the NHL At the Rink podcast, we got Mike Zeisberger, our Toronto-based NHL.com staff writer, talking all things Leafs and Panthers. We go into the Hurricanes and Capitals with him as well. Sean and I dive into the series with Vegas and Edmonton, a little on Dallas and Winnipeg, as well as what's going on around the rest of the league. All of that and more coming up on this episode of the NHL At the Rink podcast.
NHL At the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL At the Rink podcast, a fully on the road podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. I am in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Sean is the biggest trooper. He is the trooper, a first star of the podcast. Literally like 45 minutes ago, I think you landed in Las Vegas.
I did. And you want to know how many times I've been here so far in the playoffs? When I landed in Vegas today, my phone went off and Uber told me, welcome home.
Welcome home. Don't so go my to the home, ATM.
My home is no longer in New Jersey. It is now in Vegas. So I'm pretty excited about that. But in case you can't tell by my voice, I'm starting to feel a little bit of the playoffs. It's been a lot of flights here to Minnesota, maybe to Edmonton, who knows. But it's awesome. I'm never, ever going to complain.
No. That's why we do what we do, man. We love it. We love what we do. And we're going to have Mike Zeisberger with us shortly. He loves what he does. We're going to go heavy with Zeis, who's our staff writer up in Toronto, heavy on the Panthers and the Maple Leafs. And we also go pretty deep into Washington and Carolina, those two series. But Sean, since you're in Las Vegas and you just said it, maybe there's a flight to Edmonton in your future. Maybe there's not. Here you go. The Edmonton Oilers are up 3-1 on the Vegas Golden Knights going into game 5 at T-Mobile Arena. And I gotta be honest with you. I am surprised that I don't think I'm surprised, Sean, that Edmonton's played pretty well in this series. I'm a little bit surprised that Vegas hasn't at least won 2 of the 4 games. And I'm really surprised that Vegas didn't have much in game 4. That there was just not, you know, I mean, not enough attempts, not enough possession, not enough on Stuart Skinner, if you will, didn't make it really hard on a goalie who is coming back in and has not played well in these playoffs to date.
Well, I think you have to give Edmonton some of the credit there. This is as good a defensive team as I've seen in Edmonton, probably my time covering the NHL. Like, just system-wise, they're willing to play, you know, the 200-foot game. Everybody's bought in. They're getting depth scoring that they've never gotten. Their ability to score through all 4 lines. Adam Henrique has 2 goals last night. You know, it's been the difference in this series. I think Vegas has done a decent enough job on McDavid and Draisaitl. I thought it was interesting last night that Chris Knobloch tried to get Draisaitl away from Eichel a little bit by putting him with 4th liners at certain times. And, you know, it's twofold there, right? He's saying, I believe in my 4th liners and that they can play with this guy. And it's also saying, you know, I need these different matchups and I'm willing to push these buttons. So, you know, it's really been the depth, and Vegas is beat up. Dorofiev has come back in. He's their leading goal scorer, but he's hurt. Stone gets hurt in game 3. I don't know what percentage he is. McNabb goes into the board shoulder first. They look like a Jack Hughes type of situation. He's gotten through it. You know, they're not healthy by any stretch of the imagination. But I don't know that they're dead yet. I think if anybody knows this, it's Edmonton, right? They were in the final last year and they were down 3-0. And they fell a goal short of winning in game 7. So, you know, I think Connor McDavid's already passing that message along that none of this means anything until we get the 4th one.
Well, yeah, that's obvious. And you're right. It's a great point you make that of all the teams that would know about this, it's certainly the Edmonton Oilers down 3-0 and then come back to force a game 7 against the Florida Panthers. But if you had asked me, Sean, before the series began, we're four games in, pick which team's going to be more beat up, I would have picked Edmonton. And it would have been an easy choice because of Vegas, because of their style of play, because of how heavy they are and how they attack and they pound you and they take their pound of flesh a little bit here in game one, a little bit more in game two, a little bit more in game three, right? But it's the other way around. And that really is a credit. Listen, not all these injuries are a credit to Edmonton pounding them. Some of them just happened, but it's really a credit to Edmonton. And to your point of depth makes a great deal of sense too. And empowering that depth too, right? It's not just like, how would you feel if you're a third or fourth line player with the Edmonton Oilers and Knobloch is just basically saying, I got McDavid and Draisaitl and they're going to go win us the game. No, I mean, you're empowered by this guy, they're being empowered to go be difference makers because they know how important that depth is to get into, you know, in the playoffs. They needed it last year, and they know how important goaltending is, and they need that. And Stuart Skinner was good enough, right? He gets a shutout. He's good enough, obviously. Didn't have to be great, good enough when the rest of the team can play as well as they played. So, yes, credit to Edmonton for how they played, certainly in game four. I was just surprised. Not surprised that Edmonton could play well. Surprised that Vegas didn't have more. Couldn't get more to the inside. Didn't have that. But maybe what your point is on their banged up, that might have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I think they found it harder than they did 2 years ago. And there's a higher price to be paid to do it. So, I think that's part of it. But I do think, when you have Stuart Skinner in net and he didn't look good in game three, I don't think the winning goal is his fault. I mean,
you want to break down the winning goal. There's a lot of fault on that.
He put the player in a position where he couldn't score. That's a goalie's job.
Yep.
And the pass was open. Carlson was wearing somebody like a top coat. And I don't think there was enough time for it to get there. So, like, to me, Skinner did his job there, but he was shaky before that. He was shaky early in the series. Calvin Pickard was ridiculous. Like, they shouldn't even be in this series. That cat won six games in a row. He's got almost no playoff experience. He basically Aiden Hill. The Vegas Golden Knights. Like, now Vegas gets to know what it feels like. And Aiden Hill, it's not been good for them. He hasn't been a difference maker. You could see last night that it was getting to him. Before the series started, he mentioned in a scrum how he enjoys physical contact, how it gets him going. He went looking for it last night.
Yeah. You never want to go looking for it as a goalie.
And you can't look for it. It has to come to you. If you go looking for it, you're going to be in trouble. And he went looking for it last night. You know, he got in the way of people, and he got knocked down, and he got tripped. Look, the Evander Kane one, he didn't initiate that one at all, but that's just rough and tumble play around the crease, right? The D kind of drove him into it. But he was Billy Smith light last night, to the point where the referee had to go and talk to him and be like, hey, dude, the next one's on you. You know, I've called it on everybody else, and I've given everybody else warnings. The next time it happens, it's going to be on you. And that's not going to be cool, so chill.
You know what? 100%. Before we get to Zeiss, Mike Zeisberger, our Toronto-based NHL.com staff writer, we go deep into the Leafs and Panthers and Caps and Hurricanes with him. I did want to make this point about this series, Sean. Isn't it amazing that the Golden Knights are still in this series simply because of one goal with 1 second left in the game? You don't know what happens in that game if it goes to overtime, right? So that's where they're at in this series. And it really, it is because of a massive breakdown of all over the place from the Edmonton Oilers that they were able to recover from that and go out and play as well defensively as they did in game four to get a 3-0 win and really seize control of this series. That is the difference between the Edmonton Oilers of a couple of years ago and the Edmonton Oilers of right now. It's right there for you. You know, they go on the long run last year, they figure out what it takes, and then this year, that's right there. That's the proof is in the pudding right there.
Yeah, they learned what it takes from losing to win. And you know, we're going to talk to Zize about this a lot. Like, that's where the Toronto Maple Leafs are now. Have they figured that out? You know, that's going to be spelled out over the next 2 to 3 games. But it's clear that Edmonton has figured it out. They've gone to their depth. They play, you know, 180-foot game now. They protect their goaltender. Do all of the things that you need to do. There's very little selfishness in their game anymore. And they're really dangerous. They're really dangerous.
Really dangerous, yeah. Well, let's get to Zize. Actually, before we get to Zize, Dallas, Winnipeg, we have not forgotten about you. The only problem is that we're recording this episode just a couple of hours before they take the ice for their game 4. So a lot will change when they do play that game. So what we say here will be quite old, in fact. But we're going to hit on a little bit coming out of the interview with Zize. But before we get to Zize, here is a word from Skip. Brie Food, beauty. Skip 60 to score is here. Get even more wins during the Stanley Cup playoffs. How to play, you ask? Place a game day order to play. Pick your team and get your minute. If either team scores during that time, you score a $25 Skip voucher. Order and play 60 to score in the Skip app to take your shot. Now until May 19th. Get her one. Zize, thanks so much for joining us. So why do you and Sean and I have the same number of goals in this series as Austin Matthews against the Florida Panthers? How you doing, Zize?
I'm doing great. First of all, it's great to see you guys. We've been all over the edges of this continent. And yeah, we all do have as many goals as Austin Matthews does in this series. And in fact, if we look at it, Austin Matthews has 3 goals in his last 19 playoff games. In the last 9 games that he's played in different series, 2 years ago, 5 games, the Leafs get eliminated against Florida, and then 4 games through this one. So that's 9 games. He has 0 goals. And, you know, I understand that Craig Berube is sticking up for him. He's been great in the faceoff circle at 57%. He's done a great job, I think, in the defensive zone. But guys, this is a guy that has the highest average annual value salary in the National Hockey League this season at $13.5 million. He is not being paid that to be a glorified Philippe Deneau. No offense to Philippe Deneau, but come on, you got to have a moment. And I think the frustrating thing is when you look at Austin Matthews' career, and it's not because of a lack of work ethic, and it's not, you know, he's by far not lazy. He's very talented. But when you look at the playoffs or even Four Nations, what has his signature moment been? He had a chance, look, in the final of the Four Nations in overtime. He got stopped by Binnington, and that's all well and good. But at some point, we're going on to a decade of him being in this league. There comes a point where you have to have that moment where you're a difference maker, and he's just going to have to figure it out.
So two things on that point. One, obviously he's hurt.
Yes.
And two, do you know how many goals Connor McDavid has in this playoffs?
3. He's also second in points in the entire playoffs.
Yeah, and Austin Matthews is a point per game player at 10. If we're going by points, he's not having a bad playoffs.
Connor McDavid has taken over games. He's had his fingerprints on games. And Austin Matthews hasn't had that. Not in this series, not in the previous series. And I would argue you'd be hard pressed to find him ever having it in this series. I mean, Mikko Rantanen has put his fingerprints on that series. Connor McDavid, I would argue, was a big reason why there was a turnaround for the Edmonton Oilers against the Los Angeles Kings. You have to look at where those points are coming from. Austin Matthews is the captain of the team. He's the highest paid player on the team. And Sean, he's yet to have, I'm going to keep repeating it, he's yet to have that moment. people can talk about Mitch Marner all they want. And, you know, the coach yesterday said Mitch Marner needs to shoot for more. And that's all well and good. But Mitch Marner had his moment. He scored the winning goal in game two. I don't care how it went in, whether it was from the boards. You know, there's no extra points for artistic merit, especially in the playoffs. But he had his decisive moment. And to me, Austin Matthews is far, far overdue to have his.
And that, to me, Zies, is, and I understand why, you know, you get on Austin Matthews. I brought it up. I asked the question, and I made the comparison that none of us have scored in the series either, too. Obviously joking around a little bit here. But, you know, I get it. And to Sean's point, yeah, he's clearly hurt. He's been hurt pretty much all season. You know, it's why he scored 33 goals, not 63 goals this season, because he's been hurt all season long pretty much. However, we have talked about this throughout the course of this year with Craig Berube there. We've talked about this since the start of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Are these Leafs different? And now they get up 2-0 in this series. I fully expected Florida to push back. No surprise, this is a 2-2 series. But this is another moment that they've passed the tests along the way here to prove that they are different.
Yeah.
This is another moment where they have to prove that they are different. They're going to have to prove they're different all the way through the Stanley Cup, at least to the Stanley Cup final, right? That's how you do it. That's how you prove it. That's what Edmonton did last year. That's what the Leafs have to do now. If they're going to prove it, Matthews has to be a part of that. Hurt or not, he has to be a part of that. Now, I'll say this, guys, and maybe you disagree with me. It doesn't have to be a goal. It has to be a play. It has to be a moment, being part of a signature moment in this series that really turns it now, which is a best of three, into the favor of the Toronto Maple Leafs. They got home ice. You're coming back 2 days off between games. Here it is, game five. It's on a platter for you now, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I agree with both of you about the injury thing. I mean, this is significant. He missed 9 games with an upper body injury earlier in the year, I think in November. He missed 6 more games at the end of December to January. He actually went to Germany to see a doctor in a clinic in late November to get stuff looked at. So, you know, it's not a black and white situation whatsoever. And I give him all the credit in the world for going out there and grinding. But at the same time, Dan, you know, like, he's tied with Marner for the team lead in forwards in terms of block shots with 13. He's been great in the faceoff circle at 57.4%. So, and he's been great defensively. So when you look at that, okay, so he's skating well enough to be able to play well defensively, like we said. Speculation about his wrist, but, you know, it can't be totally bad because you don't win 57% of your faceoffs if your wrist is totally shot. You know, and he's putting his body on the line, which I give him credit for. So there has to be an ability somehow to score. And I wonder sometimes, because he is such a big body, why not plop him in front of the goalie? Just, okay, you know what? You're not scoring on the one-timer from the faceoff circle. Go in front of the goalie. But I agree. It's about moments. And look, it's a team game. It's not just him. And to your other point, yes, we've saw it, you know, they got up 3-0 against Ottawa. And then they lost the next two, and it's like, uh-oh, here they go again. And, you know, they came through some adversity, a late Ottawa goal in game 6 off their goalie's back. And you thought, uh-oh, here goes the momentum. Pacioretty scores, they win the series. All of a sudden you're going like, well, that's something we really haven't seen here. The fact that they played well the first two games against the defending Stanley Cup champions when everybody thought, okay, it's going to end here, was impressive. And look, I mean, they were one shot away in game 3. Okay, yeah. That's the way that that's – look, we all know that's the way that playoffs work. You know, you go into overtime. Bob was Bob. It goes off Riley. They get a bad bounce. All of a sudden, Florida goes from being down 3-0 to being down 2-1. So The only thing that you start going, uh-oh, is you watch game four. Number one, they take four penalties in the first period. I mean, you can't do that against anybody, let alone Florida in their barn. But number two, Florida looked like Florida. And I'm not, you know, I didn't see that in the previous games, and now they are. So to me, the margin of error shrinks even that much more because the Panthers have found their game. Do I think Toronto can still win this series? Yes. I've seen a resilience from them that I hadn't really seen in past years. But a lot of things have to go right. And the number one thing you can't do is shoot yourself in the foot, which they did in game four.
But how much of that credit goes to Florida being Florida, right? They've done this to eight opponents in a row here.
Yep. No, a lot, Sean. But and that's to my point, though. If you are going to beat this team, you might not beat them even if you're playing at your best, but you're certainly not going to beat them by having a parade into the penalty box the way that they did. And Berube, to that point, was very critical of his team. He just goes, you can't have the stick penalties the way that they did. Every now and then there's a physicality penalty that comes up in the heat of battle, and that'll happen just so long it's not after the whistle. But the stick penalties were bad. They actually did a good job. They pretty much killed off the first three, but, you know, sooner or later it's going to happen. And you can see Florida gaining confidence as this series has gone on, and especially with Bobrovsky, because starting in overtime of game three, I think we started seeing the Bob that we all expected and the Bob that led this team to the Stanley Cup last year.
You know, it's a great point, guys. I think they're getting better as the series goes on, and I think they're getting better as the playoffs go on, which should be terrifying to the rest of the NHL.
Yes.
And it really goes to show you that the blessings in disguise. You know, Ekblad didn't want to miss 20 games with a suspension, but he did. And maybe he's fresher because of it, right? Matthew Tkachuk wanted to play every minute he could possibly play, but he couldn't play in the last 25 games of the season because of the injuries he sustained in the Four Nations. You know, maybe that's the blessing in disguise there. Like, he's fresh. He's better. And he's getting better as this series goes on. Bob looks like he's getting better as the series goes on. They look like they're starting to exert themselves as this series goes on. But all that being said, you got Game 5 in Toronto, and the Leafs played a bad game. Like, they played a bad game. Like, Florida played a really good game. But the Leafs played a bad game four. Florida played a bad, game one, probably, right? Like, it wasn't great, you know? So you're going to – all right, so you even that out. You have an even series. I still look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and I say, I see no reason why they can't go win this series. I see no reason why they can't go win game five, right? You know, like, especially if they're going to get a goaltending performance even close to the performance that Joseph Woll gave them in game four. So they should be confident. Like, they should feel good. They're 2-2 in a best of three series right now, and they have home ice advantage. Why shouldn't they feel good about that? Even though they lost the last two games, right?
They should. I agree, Dan, they should. And here's the other thing. They played a bad game the other night, and they were one shot away for 55 minutes of that game, or, you know, however, you know, Florida scored late in the first. Until there were 6 minutes left in the third, they were one shot away from tying that game, okay? So, and I think that's one of the differences in this team this year, is especially defensively, is that even when they're playing poorly and they get a goal, you know, obviously they have a goalie, a goalie performance like that, but they kept it close. They gave themselves a chance. And I think that, you know, if they go out tomorrow, we saw in the first couple of games, when they don't get suckered into the stuff after the whistle and they stick to their game, the collapsing, the blocked shots, and they wait for their chances. You know, we saw William Nylander in the first couple games, where if you just give their skilled guys just a little bit of room, you know, they can, as good as Bob is, you have a chance. You have a chance. And I do think this team plays differently. I think that Craig Berube you know, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. You can see that the players are kind of buying into this. You've got guys like Brandon Carlo, who's been through it in Boston, and Chris Tanev, who was with Dallas last year, and they've ridden the roller coaster. Nobody expected this to be a short series. And the other guy that I think that we've all seen grow up and mature into a beast in front of our eyes is Matthew Knies. I mean, this guy, it's been really impressive, you know, watching even in the last 4 or 5 months, the confidence that's grown in this guy, and he's really become an alpha on this team. And while Matthews has struggled a little bit, like we talked about, it's been Knies has been the guy in that line that's kind of stirred the drink.
He's been fantastic, and it's part of the core five. But I just want to go back and make one point on this series before we move on. How is Matthew Tkachuk playing better and Austin Matthews stinks?
To me, it's all timing. Matthew Tkachuk has done it in the past. When his points come, are at key points in the game, no pun intended. And Matthews hasn't done that. He just hasn't come through in the big moments, and Matthew Tkachuk has. So I think the narrative isn't just about this series. It's about bigger picture. And I think that's the big difference, because we've all seen Matthew Tkachuk come up in big instances. And by the way, he's hurt too. He has not had he has not been the impact player in terms of the way he's skating, the way that he's shooting. But I'll tell you one thing, hurt or not, Matthew Tkachuk knows where his bread is buttered, and that's in front of the opposition goalie in the blue paint. And he's managed to maximize the ability that he has, because in no way is he 100% either.
I'm looking forward to game five, because I'm looking forward to seeing if Austin Matthews, I think he can have a big game five. I do.
Yeah.
And I also want to see Matthew Tkachuk, because he basically put it out there at the end of game four, like, you know, coming after you guys with the boarding Max Domi had, you know, on Barkov. So that will be an interesting one. But let's move. Zyz, you are of the three of us, although Sean likes to think he is Canadian at times because his wife's family is from Newfoundland. You are the resident Canadian here. So I have a question for you. This topic actually was come up. I've heard it a few times. So if the Toronto Maple Leafs, big if the Toronto Maple Leafs make it to the Stanley Cup final, and if it's Edmonton or Winnipeg, you'll get a Canadian champion for the first time since 1993. But unless you're in Toronto, Winnipeg slash or, you know, Edmonton, who's Canada rooting for in that? Does anybody in Canada want to see the Leafs other than Southern Ontario?
Yes, but let me preface it by this. All you got to do, I mean, you guys have seen it firsthand. If the Leafs play in Vegas, if they play in Florida,
yep,
they go to California, there's Leaf fans everywhere. That doesn't necessarily mean it's people in those markets that are born and bred. It's just that half of Canada will like them because they've always liked them, and the other half will want to have nothing to do with them. And it won't be because they're Oiler fans, and it won't be because they're Jets fans. It's because anybody but the Leafs, okay? And every time we see, you know, I saw last week that Justin Bieber's wife was going to some big dinner in New York City, and he was supposed to attend. But he posts on Instagram that he couldn't go with her because he's lying in his mansion in California watching his beloved Leafs on television. You don't think everybody in the country that isn't a Leaf fan is just getting sick to their stomach looking at Justin Bieber? Like, I mean,
good
need I
him.
Say more? I mean, you're laughing, Dan. You know where
good
I'm coming
for him.
From.
Good for him. I like it.
Yeah, just let your wife go to the dinner. I got the Leaf game tonight.
What, because he's famous? He's not allowed to be a fan?
Yeah.
Oh, but he's Justin Bieber. No offense,
good for him. So I did want to ask you, too, you know, I'm covering Washington, Carolina. So you get it. You know, you guys know when you're covering a series, like you see all the different, all the little details going on in the series, and you don't have the outsider perspective because you're inside the series. So, Zyz, What's the outside perspective when you're not embedded in the series? What has it been? What do you look at in this Carolina Washington series? What has intrigued you? To me, it's of the three of the four series, it's got the least amount of juice, if you will. Mm-hmm. But you know, they've been real competitive games, though. That's the thing.
Number one is that you know, and you've covered a couple of these, Dan, when they played the Rangers or even the Panthers, that Carolina, when they've stalled in the playoffs the last 2 years, their offense dries up. Like, they can't get that one goal at the one time that will be a difference maker, even though they may swarm. The year they swept Florida, or sorry, 2 years ago when Florida swept Carolina, I mean, that was not a sweep in terms of style of play or which way the ice was tilted, but they could never get that goal. And that's what I'm seeing from the outside looking in with Carolina this year, is that they are getting that goal. And, you know, something closer to Toronto is I always got along with Freddie Anderson, but he had the penchant of breaking down. And he looked, you know, he did that, I guess, earlier in the playoffs, but he looks healthy now. He's making timely saves. And, you know, I like what I've seen from Carolina. And even though I look at that team and say, you know, there were points of this season where first they had Marty Nekas and then they had Rantanen, and we understand that that's the way that it went. Are those guys, you know, did they take a step back in their overall talent pool from where they were at certain points in the season? But Stankoven looks like he's fit in really good there. And like I said, they're coming through at the key moments. And to me, they've actually made the Capitals look slow at times.
They've made them look extremely slow. And I think the thing I see more from the outside, and it's not watching the games because I've enjoyed them, even though they're on at 4 o'clock here, which is a little rugged, is the narrative that they play ugly hockey. Chip, dump, whack, put it around the boards. You play the hockey that your team's suited for.
Mm-hmm.
Play it well. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Carolina Hurricanes are going. They make the Washington Capitals look like me trying to escape quicksand.
Well, it's true because, in the game four last night here in Raleigh, where I am right now, you know, there were times I was looking at the Capitals bench, and there were a couple of shifts where the Capitals bench, and they went to a TV timeout, and you're looking, and they're gasping for air. Like, I mean, gasping for air, trying to get through to the next shift. That's mm-hmm. what the Carolina Hurricanes do when they're playing their hockey. Ask Rod Brind'Amour. He thinks it's a stupid narrative, and he thinks it's lazy. In fact, I brought it up to him at one point, and I said, you're a shot volume team, and he didn't even let me finish. He goes, what does that mean? I said, well, it means you put a lot of pucks towards the net. You put a lot of shots towards the net. And he goes, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I'm like, Rod.
Yes, you good got for Rod.
But okay, fine. They have 329 shot attempts in the series, okay? Like, they're a shot volume team. Everybody knows it. But his point, and it's very well taken, is that if you just look at, and it's to your point, Sean, if you just look at them being a shot volume team, and he said this after game four, it's lazy. They do way more. How do they become a shot volume team? They come at you in waves. They forecheck. Mm-hmm. They track backs as best as well as any team in the that I've ever seen do, and it's killing the Washington Capitals, who have never been confused, to your point, Sean, with being a fast team. The Capitals have been a team all season long that connect passes well, that don't make mistakes, that limit turnovers, and they connect on their high-danger chances. They're not scoring on their high-danger chances. They're not getting a lot of them. They barely have the puck because they can't connect passes because the Hurricanes are in their face all the time. And then once the Hurricanes get the puck, yes, they become a shot-volume team.
Well, and here's the other thing. Like, the Capitals, and we've heard this narrative all year because it's true, they're a big team. They're a muscular team. Well, that's all well and good. if you can catch the other team. Okay? You can't use that size if you can't catch the other team, to your point, number one. And number two, if those big guys are always facing the opposite way, they're facing their own net because the pucks keep getting dumped in, okay, you're on the defensive. You're not on the offensive. And I think that's been proven. And the other thing is, you know, like Sean mentioned, you know, people think the Canes because they dump it in and all that stuff. It's exactly what the Florida Panthers do. And then what is Stanley Cup by doing it? They swarm and they dump pucks in. Okay. I'm coming off of covering a 2-0 game. Okay. This is not fire wagon hockey, but if it's a proven commodity, especially if your players buy in and it maximizes their talents. And I think I don't find Carolina to be boring at all. I actually, the way they swarm the opposition, I kind of think it's really cool because when you're watching those games on TV, there always seems to be at least four Carolina guys in the picture. Even when they pass the puck to the other side of the ice, there's four more guys. I mean, it looks like they got a football team out there.
Yeah, look, I it's like the old Devils, right? Most people on this podcast probably don't remember the old Devils other than to hear that they were really boring when they played for Jacques Lemaire. They scored 300 and something goals, two in the league. Well, they're boring. They're boring because nobody knows who their players are.
Yeah.
We talk about Matthew Tkachuk. We talk about Austin Matthews. We talk about all these players. Nobody knows who plays for the Carolina Hurricanes because they play in Carolina. They're not on TV a lot, whatever it might be. Unbelievably talented players who, if they played in other markets, would be superstars. Jacob Slavin jumps to mind.
Yes.
Seth Jarvis, with his personality and his ability to do stuff, jumps to mind. They do what they do, and they do it really well. And why should they do anything else? Because we've all seen what fire wagon hockey does to a team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Toronto Maple Leafs, Edmonton Oilers. Yeah. The Oilers are playing the most boring hockey at times in this series against Vegas because they know that's where their success is. They are basically the Carolina Hurricanes or Tom Brady throwing the 3-yard pass. Well, he can't throw the ball down the field. It's not sexy. He's not throwing bombs. He's not throwing interceptions. That's what the Carolina Hurricanes are doing. They're taking the safe play every single time, and that's what you want to do in the playoffs. Good for them. I'll watch it for another 20 games.
Well, first of all, Sean, like Brady, nobody can stop them, at least this far. And the other thing is, I mean, you mentioned Slavin. I mean, we sat beside each other at Four Nations and just watched this guy, you know, with all the respect in the world of getting to see him against some of the greatest players on this planet and the job that he did. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, some of their players are no different than some of the better known guys that we talk about. They just don't get the publicity, but you know, they keep playing this way, they'll be getting some publicity in the next few weeks.
When the Hurricanes are on as an opponent, it's got to feel like they're constantly rabbit punching you in the face over and over and over again. Like, you won't get hurt. You're not going to kill you, but you're going to go nowhere. And eventually you're just going to be like, I can't do this anymore. I just want to go
by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
People are just mad that Ovi can't have 6 one-timers a game. 5-on-3 to score. And people are mad, and I don't blame them. Like, that's exciting hockey. I want to watch Ovi score. But it's not the other team's fault that they've completely taken him out of the game, out of the series. Like, that's their job, and that's beautiful hockey, too. Like, people are always like, oh, it's negative. It's destructive. It's not. It's beautiful. It's just a different skill set, and it's a different commitment. And I'm telling you, sign me up to watch 20 more games of it.
Although
that'd be one or two. My math is bad. I guess I could only watch.
It's Vegas. It's Vegas math, Sean. But the other thing is, I mean, you know, you hear when it comes to the Capitals, one of the reasons, and I give them all the credit in the world, and hey, they may still win the series, but one of the reasons I kind of had an asterisk next to them in terms of how far I thought they could go is because they had a guy, they brought all these new players in, and a lot of them had, you know, you look at the Mangiapanes and guys like that. I mean, they played so well. They almost played to their ceiling. And you just wondered, like, what's going to happen? Chychrun, he did not look like this in Ottawa. He looked nothing like this in Ottawa. And he goes to Washington, and he's been outstanding. But you just wonder, when are they going to come to earth a little bit? And, you know, Ovi aside, because, I mean, he's not from Earth, by the way, that he keeps going. But you guys know what I mean. I mean, there's a lot of guys that had never played together that got that came together that have had outstanding seasons. But you look at their last two or three seasons before this, and it's like, wow, you know, this is the best year they've had in a few. Well, maybe it was time for them to come back to Earth a little bit.
Yeah, not surprising that it's against the Hurricanes, who are just quicker, and they're quicker all over. And we'll see. It's 3-1. The Capitals have been resilient all year, so you never know. But, Zeiss, this was great. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. You got a juicy series there. Keep covering it, and maybe the Leafs will give you more hockey into the spring. Toronto would love it. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, listen, just you guys both be safe. You're kicking you-know-what. Great coverage. It's been great to read, listen to the podcast, and please, safe travels, and I hope to see you soon.
Great stuff there from Zeiss. Long conversation with him, hit on a lot of topics there, Sean, but I did mention before we went to the interview with Mike Zeisberger that we got to at least touch on Stars and Jets. Yes, they're playing in a couple hours from when we are recording this podcast, so by the time you listen to it, Game 4 might be in the books already, but Miro Heiskanen is coming back for the Dallas Stars, or already has come back, depending on when you listen to this. And listen, wherever Game 4 goes, Sean, that is a huge addition. They've gotten their number one defenseman, one of the top 5 or 10 defensemen in the league, back. That's huge for the Dallas Stars.
It is huge, and they've been arguably the better team without him, right? I don't think anybody can say enough about what Thomas Hawley has done in Heiskanen's absence. He's developed into a legitimate number one himself. You know, he got a little bit of recognition when he got called up at the last minute for Team Canada. But he's been fantastic. And there's been nobody better in the playoffs, no matter what happens in Game 4 in a little while, than Mikko Rantanen.
So good.
Everybody was wondering early in that series about Colorado. Oh, is it worth all of this? What's he doing? Can he not play against his old team? Like, he had the revenge tour. He saved it till late. And then he's been dominant at times against Winnipeg. Like, there's just no answer for this guy when the train gets rolling, right? So, and I don't know. Obviously, McDavid and Draisaitl, but I don't know if there's another player in the league when they get rolling like that that's quite as dangerous.
Somebody asked me the other day, like, what makes Rantanen so dangerous? And I'm like, he is the perfect power forward for the modern game in 2024-25. He's huge. They call him the Moose for a reason. He's so physical. He's so hard to get the puck off of him because of his size and his strength. Yet he has the skill that of like a little man, right? And like the speed of like a little guy. It's quite amazing. And you know, I think the world of Nathan MacKinnon, and I think he's a bull in a china shop type of player, and just speed, skill, you know, power, toughness, all of it. And Rantanen has all of that. He's a different player, but he's got all of that, and he's just the perfect power forward for the game and where we are right now.
You know what I'm most happy about is there was this whole narrative or this whole idea, and clearly Colorado bought into it a little bit.
Oh, I know where you're going. Yes, they did.
Was that Nathan MacKinnon made Rantanen?
Yep.
That he was a good player, but he was a great player because he was playing with a great player. And we can find another good player to play with a great player, and we're not really going to lose all that much, and we could do it a lot cheaper. And Rantanen has shown that he's a great player all by himself. He doesn't need any help. He doesn't need to hide in anybody's shadow. He doesn't need to be sheltered. He doesn't need any of that. He is the man.
Well, Wayne Gretzky won the Stanley Cup with Mark Messier. Mark Messier won the Stanley Cup without Wayne Gretzky, right? Now, talking about two of the greatest players to ever lace up skates, obviously. But the comparison works, right? Wayne Gretzky remained an unbelievable player after he left Edmonton, but Messier won the Stanley Cup with Edmonton without him. He won the Stanley Cup with the Rangers without him, and Gretzky never won the Cup without Messier.
Yeah, I think if you ask Mark Messier in a very quiet moment, I won't ask him because in case I'm wrong, but I think winning it without Wayne is really validating.
It's gotta be.
Right? When you're Robin to someone else's Batman, and then you can say, I'm not Robin, I'm Batman. There's two Batmen.
Batmen. Bat plural.
That's got to be pretty satisfying.
100%. You know what's great about these playoffs that is still possible is that Mikko Rantanen can roll through his former team that didn't want to pay him or didn't want to keep him because he was willing to stay for a little bit less, apparently. And he still has a chance to face up against to go up against the team that he didn't want to sign with either, the Carolina Hurricanes. So it's some pretty good narratives there around Mikko Rantanen that you got to keep track of. Again, can't go too deep into Dallas and Winnipeg. As I mentioned earlier, they're playing just in a couple hours from when we're recording this podcast. So they could have game four could be done by the time you listen to it. You should still listen to the whole thing, by the way. Quickly, Sean, before we do get out of here, in other news, we got Joel Quenneville back in the National Hockey League with the Anaheim Ducks. Listen, I mean, he laid it all out there in his press conference. Go watch it if you didn't. He the mea culpas and the I'll be betters and all that. And I thought he handled himself very well, in all of that. And now let's see how he coaches. He hasn't coached in this league in a while, but the Anaheim Ducks hire him. We obviously know that Mike Sullivan's with the New York Rangers. There's still six coaches openings. Philadelphia, Seattle, Vancouver, Pittsburgh, Boston, and Chicago, if I am correct, still six. And two GM openings. L.A., which is reports are Kenny Holland's going to get the job there, and the New York Islanders.
What does this Anaheim Ducks team remind you of?
Oh, you think they're a little bit like the Chicago Blackhawks when Quenneville took over for Denny Savard there?
Yeah. Really,
a little bit.
Really good at the most important positions.
Yeah. Maybe better at goaltending than the Blackhawks were at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dostal gets no credit. He might be the most underrated goalie in the NHL.
Leo Carlson's a terrific player. McTavish can be a terrific player, right? They're defensemen. They got a couple of defensemen that are really coming. Quenneville said it. Like, I wanted to come back with a team like this, with this team. And he's got a chance here to really put his stamp on it. And I want to give Greg Cronin full credit here, by the way. 21-point improvement, and the guy lost his job.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, he said afterwards to Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic, I was reading it on the plane this morning, it's a little easier to swallow when that's why you lost your job, right? And I guess that Quenneville called Cronin and said, thank you for setting this up for us. Like, the team's in a really good place. And I think the most important thing with Q is that team is really young, but they're getting a reputation of being coach killers, of not doing what needs to be done, of thinking that they're smarter than they might be. Q just takes his hand out,
yeah,
wiggles
three
the ring,
fingers.
fingers around, says, "Why don't we try it my way? It's worked in the past." Like, he has the gravitas to say, I think this is going to work. You should try this.
And he hasn't been out of the game that long either. So, and you know he's been keeping up with it as well. By the way, again, right before we get out of here, we do got to get out of here, Sean, because you got to go do more work, by the way. Greg Cronin did some NHL Network. I don't know if you saw any of it, but he was on the NHL Network. It was him and Brian Boyle together. It was must-see TV. First off, Cronin's Boston accent is phenomenal, okay? Absolutely phenomenal. They're talking about how playing, you know, not getting a chance to play at the Boston Garden, but now all the kids get to play, you know, at TD Garden. They're talking about, like, public school, high school hockey in Massachusetts. When, like, it was terrific television. Just wanted to put that out there.
They're going to go to the Packy when they were done, man.
I mean, listen, they needed like subtitles to understand what they were saying, but it was terrific to watch. And I'm glad Greg Cronin was doing some of that stuff, because I like the guy. I think he really knows the game, and I thought he did a pretty good job with the Anaheim Ducks.
Speaking of guys with great accents from the New England area, Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders. There's rumors out there that he's going to be a part of whatever the next iteration of the GM, president of hockey operations, whatever it is going to be. Thoughts?
Quick thought on that is I don't think it's a good idea. And I have so much respect for Lou Lamoriello. But I think if you're going to cut ties, you got to cut the ties. And I think it's actually unfair to whoever they bring in there that he'd still be hanging around, because it's still part of the old school, you know, what they were getting rid of. All due respect to Lou Lamoriello. I think he's terrific. And I think his Hall of Fame career is well-merited and everything like that. But if you're going to make the change, you got to cut the pull the Band-Aid off and make the change.
How have they not hired Matthew Darche yet?
Great question. You know, another one to come up is Brent Peterson from Florida too, right? I mean, Bill Zito's right-hand man, he's been terrific there as well. So they're good candidates. There really are first-time candidates. And I think that the Islanders, and I'm not saying this should be Lou, I think that the Islanders should go the younger GM route with a veteran president of hockey operations. I think that's the way it needs to go. I don't know that that's the way it'll go, but that to me makes a lot of sense. Two hires instead of one.
Yeah, and you definitely need some young blood there, right? I think you need some young blood almost everywhere, just because of the way the game is now, right? Like, it's so much more than just the eye test, right? It's so much more than just looking at a guy and saying, oh, he fits, he doesn't fit.
Yep.
It's business, it's promotion, it's you know, inside numbers. It's all of those things. Like, I just... You know, I think it's a much more open position than it has been in traditionally. So I think the younger you can go with some experience, the better off you're going to be.
I absolutely agree with that. All right. Well, listen.
That doesn't go for this podcast, Dan. Experience
matters. Experience matters. Listen, all those guys, Brett Peterson, Matthew Darche, they've got a ton of experience. They just don't have experience in the main show, right? They've How much more learning do you need to do before you can take on the role yourself? So, great stuff from Zeiss on this podcast. Great stuff from you, Sean. Go to work already. I mean, you're in Vegas. You've been there for a few hours. You've done the podcast. Go write something already, all right?
I'm off, baby. Nice.
There you go.
Summerlin, we're still in it. We got life. But this is Vegas, dude. The long odds come in, and they're huge payoffs. So, we'll see what happens.
All right. This was a lot of fun, and remember, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.